Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Catherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back to the next episode of the Family Express with Catherine and Rhonda. We have our next installment of our Attachment and Action series today. Today is all about the world of the toddler, and I'm super excited. We have a great episode planned for clinicians and parents and understanding the role of the toddler and how the dyadic partnership begins to take shape and how that partnership ripples out to the family. I'm just so excited today, Catherine. We have a great plan.
I'm so grateful to Patricia Crittenden and the book that we're reading called Attachment and Play Therapy that she wrote with her co-authors, Dallas, Lendini, and Kozlowski. And just love their thoughts on what's happening during the toddler years. And then, like you said, how that affects the whole family system.
Yeah, as I'm so appreciative for this book. The chapter itself did take my brain a little bit of a doozy ride, but I got lots of notes and I learned a ton. And as I think about the world of the toddler and how it impacts how the world of the toddler impacts the dyad of parent child and how that impacts the family system, one thing that comes to mind, which is a bit practical, is your upcoming EFFT and play therapy supervision group that starts in December, and toddlers would be a perfect fit. So any clinicians out there who are working with families and that have toddlers, EFFT with play therapy with these concepts in mind that we're going to be covering, for clinicians out there, I would just say you'd be in good hands with Catherine and Liliana coming up here in December.
Oh, thank you for the shout out, Rhonda. And in my experience working with play therapy and young children, sometimes it's more the preschool years that parents are bringing kiddos in, but the toddler years come just before that, right? So this is really important to go back and feel into like what was happening. So as I was preparing for the episode, I found myself thinking, what would it be like to be a toddler? And I'm like, well, I should know, because once upon a time, apparently I was one. But if you think of that contrast between like being in your parents' arms a lot, getting swayed, right? Just eating and sleeping. Now you're this toddler who can move around and suddenly the world is like so much bigger. Okay, not that big, right? How big is it? It's like as big as your family is, probably in the park and the car and the grocery store and your household and your siblings. But now the toddler can start to make their way around their world, and there's just a lot of learning that starts to happen as a result of that. And I think what's tricky, as I imagine being the toddler, is it's like you're this little human who's seeing things and taking in things, and you can understand language, but you're starting to learn how to use language. But language is a very big aspect of development that's happening, but you also can only figure out language if it's direct and explicit.
Too complex language coming from the adults. If that language is too complex, it's not going to impact that toddler developing brain.
Yeah.
It's going to be in one ear, out the other in a way. The language that will stick, if I'm hearing you correctly, is clear and direct language.
And I would say sequential. So toddlers, what they're learning brain-wise, this book's telling us, is that they start drawing conclusions about how the world works. So they're very astute at taking in information. So when I do this, my mom gets a confused look, and it's about this, and then she says this. So they really are learning sequences in terms of relationships, relational repair, how the world works. Mm-hmm. And so we have a very nice time to teach them sequentially using direct explicit language. That's an opportunity to set up these sequences.
As you say that, as we get more specific, clear, direct, sequential language, the image that popped up in my head was a flow chart that the kid creates inside themselves for like each parent.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And all of that, like cognition and cognitive capacity, is the whole purpose is to help that toddler make sense of things.
Yeah.
And if I can make sense of something, then I basically know what the rules are and what's okay.
Yeah.
And I can follow that and I can put it in sequential order. And is that's just what
Yeah. And I think the thing that hit me in the chapter the hardest is the author saying toddlers can develop a different attachment strategy if you've got two parents in a family with each of the parents. So, but let's make this a bit clearer. I remember when my son was in the toddler age, and I remember him sitting in the kitchen at his little kid table eating. And I was a busy mom, and I'm like, it's bath time. And we always had a very structured household. That's just how I could keep sane, was by keeping a structure like that. I'm not saying that that's necessary, but we just need consistency and predictability in how we parent. So anyway, I'd run a bath and I walked into the kitchen to go get him, and I just leaned down and picked him up under the arms to go take him for bath time. And he started protesting and screaming.
Mm.
And luckily my husband was in the same room and had watched this whole scenario. And I looked at Etienne like, what on earth is going on? My son he's quiet, he's sweet, he's detail-oriented. Like, for him to bellow the way that he did was really strange. And I look over at Etienne in an alarm, and Etienne says, I think I know what happened. Catherine, he was like really busy on his plate and he was busy eating, and that was his whole little world. And then suddenly you just came and like, it.
Oh.
Oh my gosh. And was that a learning moment for me? I'm like, he didn't see it coming. I didn't announce what was happening. I didn't make it predictable. Mm. And I learned such a good lesson in that moment. And so from then on, I would approach him in a different way. But let's pretend like that's all I did, right?
Okay.
I walked up to him and he's in his own world and he suddenly gets pulled out of it. And then he bellows, and then maybe I freak out and he's in trouble for bellowing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's how they learn, right?
Right.
Like, what's he going to learn?
Cause and effect.
Cause and effect. Mm-hmm. Now, imagine if I walk up to him because I learned something too. And I say, hey, Jacques.
Get his attention.
Bath time. I see that you're very busy with eating, but mommy's going to pick you up right now, even though you're not done. And I'm going to take you and we're going to go have bath time together. Okay, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then he learns something entirely different.
Different.
And that makes a big difference. That makes a big difference.
It makes, right? A big difference.
In how we respond as parents and communicate what's happening and why. And you might not feel good about it, but there's a reason for it. And then this is going to happen. And then in the bath, we're going to play a fun game. And then we do, so that even though that was a little bit of a rupture because he wanted to keep fiddling with the food on his plate, he understands that mommy was doing something because it is bath time and that's important. And even though it didn't feel good, now we're going to play my favorite game with the ducks in the bath. So we feel okay.
Mm-hmm. You're saying so much already. You're saying like the world of the toddler can be focused on this one thing, really engrossed in something in their own world. And then there's an external stimuli. There's now a parent who engages with them and creates this new interaction. And from that interaction, they're going to create like a rule system in there. They're going to make sense of something.
Yeah.
And one thing that Crittenden talked about in the book was this goal-directed partnership, where the parent and the child, they're creating a goal-directed partnership. We are working together to achieve a goal. And what you just described about verbalizing, I'm going to walk over to you, I know you're not done eating, that whole process creates a goal-directed partnership. And when we don't do that, now there's what came to my mind when I read the book was almost like two different goals. There's a contrast. There's what the kid's doing and what the parent wants to do. And all of a sudden there's like a crescendo and a clash. And there isn't so much a goal-directed partnership. Yeah, I was just thinking
about that. I love how you're saying that, Rhonda, because why do we need that dyadic goal-directed partnership is exactly because what you're saying is there's two people in this relationship. And what they want is potentially different. That sets us up for conflict.
Mm-hmm.
That's normal in relationships. So let's expect the conflict, but start teaching children about the rupture repair process.
Love it.
They learn about how to navigate conflict in life, how to repair relationships. It all comes from this early age.
Totally
overwhelming. I want to go back and redo everything.
I know.
But let's think about it on this level. Why? Because in the toddler time, there's this excitement because the toddler is mobile, can move around and explore the world, which is so exciting. And there's so much learning possible. But also because the toddler can move around, there's now danger. They can fall off a table and they can run into a road. And so the parent for the first time is not just nurturer.
Mm.
The parent is now protector.
Yes.
The parent has to make that world of the toddler safe enough. Not too safe, because then toddler never gets to explore and there's no excitement.
Mm.
But also safe enough so that the toddler doesn't get hurt, which means that for the first time in the family now, between the two of them, we need rules. We need structure and we need rules about how the world works. Not too many again, because that restricts development, but not too few. Otherwise, the toddler gets hurt and there's not enough protection. This is where this goal-directed partnership comes in. Mommy's going to do this. Here's why I'm doing it. Oh, it doesn't feel good. Here's how I'm going to make up for it, distract you, and have fun.
Mm. I just have like so many connections happening in my head as you talk. And so let me just take a moment to summarize. So we have a toddler an infant who has gone from being held in one place, you know, in parents' arms, you know, sitting, to now a toddler who gets, their world is bigger, even if it's just the family room or the playroom. And now this toddler gets to explore, which takes parent. So the child goes from kind of not mobile to mobile. Parent now has to change their parenting from nurturer only to nurturer and protector, and kind of has to balance those two roles. So now we have the kid, they want to explore and do their thing. The parent has to be able to put up the guardrails. And so you got what the kid desires and what the parent must do. And there we have a potential clash of conflict that is going to happen repetition after repetition daily. Like, you're going to have so many repetitions of nurture and protect based on all the interactions parent and child can go through.
Right, right. Okay, can I introduce one more really hard variable?
Let's do it.
Where you've got two parents and the two parents disagree on how to do that. Right? And of course, I think a little bit of variability is, I mean, I always see at least a little bit of variability, and you often get sort of like the softer parent and then the firmer parent,
mm-hmm.
where that's obviously a continuum, and where there's a ton of variability and polarity,
mm-hmm.
that, can you imagine how that makes the system confusing?
Yeah.
For not only hard for the parents, of course,
the kid.
Who are now fighting each other.
Yeah, right.
How confusing that is for a toddler in that system.
Yes. Yes. It's tricky for the toddler to figure out the difference, such a stark difference between the parents.
What are the contingencies? How does this work? Why does this feel so bad between the parents?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it's feeling bad, but there isn't any direct explicit language about it, which right. is hard for parents to know exactly how to explain that, right?
Right. Direct explicit language to the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's all just kind of unspoken or being talked about in front of the kid or talked about around the kid, but not to the kid
right.
in toddler clear, direct language, then confusion for the kid just continues and maintains.
And then I think you can start seeing stress in that system on the, you could see it in the kiddo symptomizing in certain ways. You could see it in the, let's say it's a couple's relationship, in the parents and in the whole system, right? Because mm-hmm. then the whole system is full of stress and tension, and then it gets in the way of the developmental needs that need to be happening. The toddler needs to be exploring and developing language and learning about the world.
Mm-hmm.
And parents are wanting to be at a place where they can start sleeping through the night again and life's a bit easier. They can get back to their sexual relationship. They can just start feeling a bit better and get out of those, the baby stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having time to be together again as maybe like a couple over and above just the parenting. And so these are all beautiful needs we have in this stage, and any of those needs can get thwarted because of the stress, which then leads to other symptoms that then we got to end up dealing with, which just is exhausting.
Yes, it's exhausting. And then things can go wrong. Problems can come up. And if
that can lead families to come into treatment, right, with some of those problems.
Yeah. Yeah. If the parents are struggling to figure out how to address the dyadic attachment, goal-directed partnership, if that's not going so well, they have different ideas about how to do that. And so the parenting system isn't in sync.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid is not supposed to teach the parents how to do that, how to make it all work. The parents, that's when we might see families coming in for treatment, perhaps in the toddler stage, and maybe not. Maybe they try to work it out on their own for their own time and maybe try to get advice from their own parents or their caregivers or their attachment people and try to keep working on it. And then eventually we might see these families coming in for help. And what are those treatment considerations when families do come in?
Right, right. So maybe we can talk a bit about how we might see toddlers sort of showing up in a system like this if the system is overwhelmed and stressed and they're not seeing those contingencies. I think you could have toddlers taking on various strategies.
Okay, let's hear them.
And let's talk through it together.
Sounds like good.
One of the strategies is that the toddlers start taking care of the parents. They get very good at caregiving. And that might happen if the parents are completely overwhelmed and unresponsive. Like maybe you've got a parent who's just completely depressed, maybe not even out of postpartum depression.
Mm.
Then you might have a little kid who learns, I need to take care of this parent. So you could have a strong caregiving strategy starting to develop.
How might that look in a toddler? I mean, I think in the book, Crittenden talks about the toddler who learns to do a fake smile. The toddler who learns to kind of look always pleasing or joyful to the parent. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think it could look like that. Yeah.
How else could it look so our listeners can?
I don't know if toddlers or preschool, but if you were playing, it might be the child who feeds the parent. or nurtures the parent, like looks after the parent through the play.
Okay.
But of course, that's only maybe more in the preschool years you'd see that happening.
All right.
Another idea is that if the parents are not really available or get uber stressed and kind of discipline a lot and are kind of more punitive, then you might get kids who develop a strategy where they become just very, very good. Right. And their goal, it's similar to the caretaking, but their goal is to please the parent and try to do everything right.
To avoid punishment.
Yeah, accomplishment. What did you say? Accomplishment.
To avoid punishment.
Oh, to avoid punishment. Yeah. And
be right, or am I on the wrong track?
Performative in some
Formative.
Way.
Performative in some way. So we have a compliant strategy. We have a kind of performative strategy.
And that could be them getting really good at certain things because that makes the parent happy. A kid who
achieves goal.
Achieves goals. So if you see kids who are like way surpassing their development than they even would normally be at that age, like with remarkable language skills or abilities to do certain things, that could be a sign of something like that.
Got it. So let's just recap. We have a caregiving strategy where the toddler is looking to provide care, take care of the parent kind of emotionally in a way. We have a compliant strategy, which is about pleasing the parent. And there's a fear of punishment in there. That's kind of what motivates the strategy. And then there's what Crittenden called the milder form of that, which is a kind of compulsive performative strategy. So we have those. Then again, that might be the kids' achievements or physical milestones or learning to read, talk, write really young, whatever that might be. Probably not writing reading in the toddler years. But so we have these couple of caregiving and this compliant and this compulsive kind of performative strategies.
Yeah. And then you have another whole category of strategy, which is with parents where the child can't figure out the contingencies and things are, the world's kind of confusing to them. And all they know is that they want to keep their parent close by. As close as possible. They need to keep their parents' attention.
Yeah.
So that they feel like their parent is there. So their goal in life is not so much developing. Their one main goal becomes, how do I keep my mommy's attention? How do I keep my mommy as close as possible? And guess what the best way is to do that in life?
Tell us.
You act unpredictably. You either act out and freak out and melt down. If you get angry, it's basically, how do I keep my parent on their toes? If I keep my parent on their toes, they'll constantly be around me. And if I don't keep my parent on their toes, my parent might go off and who knows what might happen. So my goal is keep my parent on their toes. So I could act out. I could act helpless. I could do a variety, and I might switch, right, and do a variety of different things because my main goal is just keep the parents' attention on me.
Mm. That makes so much sense. And as I was reading the chapter, it was interesting that the cue to the strategy, right, the toddler's cue to this type of strategy is, doesn't figure out the contingencies. It's unclear. It's ambiguous. It's uncertain. The kid's feeling confused because the parenting interaction, the kid can't figure out that interaction, can't figure out like the rule set.
Right.
The kid's feeling so confused. And then the kid, because they can't figure out the contingencies, they just kind of like try everything.
Different
behavioral and affective things, all for the goal of keeping the parent strategy because they can't figure out the parent, the contingencies. I just think that's so interesting.
Yeah. And as you gesticulate like that, Rhonda, I think that's exactly how it is. You've got a kid who's just very emotional.
Yeah.
Crying or angry or whatever display there is, like they're just very emotional, and it works to pull the parent in, and that becomes how they do life.
Which takes me back to what you said just a few moments ago, where you said, even as the example of the bathtub, and you said, in my house, we had a very structured thing. I'm not saying all houses need that, but what kids need from their parents is they need consistency and predictability. And I think what we're saying that this type of strategy emerges because there is inconsistency and unpredictability in the dyad. And the kid, because the kid can't figure out this inconsistency and unpredictability, the kid tries different strategies for the goal of keeping the parents' attention. Maybe I act real big and I act out and I have meltdowns or tantrums, or maybe I act helpless and I kind of pull for your comforting response from the parent.
Yeah. And I don't know this per se, but what I've certainly witnessed is that you can have families who parent in very different ways and still have toddlers who can make sense of it. So like my personality and our household is just, I just am very structured. Like there's a bedtime at a certain time, eating time, blah, blah, blah. It's pretty consistent and mundane. But I've also got some friends who weren't like that at all. They had, to me, it seemed like they had no structure. Mm-hmm. Like they took their kids out everywhere with them and to all kinds of social occasions and no particular bedtime. But those kids have turned out amazingly because the contingency was still there in terms of, I know my parents around and this is how the world works. Right. So I'm not advocating for you have to have a structure look a certain way. I think as long as you have a structure and you know what it is and how that works, then your child experiences it and it becomes predictable to them.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's still predictable in the eyes of the child.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. They know how their little system works.
Exactly. They know how the system works and the system becomes consistent and predictable.
Yeah. Yeah.
It might be different in that family in the next door neighbor's house, right? That family might look totally different.
Exactly.
But as long as each family is consistent and predictable, then we wouldn't see these strategies. But when the dyadic interactions are inconsistent, unpredictable, uncertain, ambiguous, and the child cannot figure out the contingencies, then we're going to see these strategies in an effort to, I think, help me out here, correct me if I'm wrong, in essence, to like avoid pain and also to maintain the attachment. Is that fair to summarize it that way?
Yeah, I think that's a nice way to say it. Is the thing that becomes most important to the child at that in that strategy is I need to keep the attachment. I need to keep my parent around. And then doesn't become as important is how do I grow and develop?
Oh, and that breaks my heart as you say that.
Self, you know? Yeah. Mm. Like, I mean, in an ideal world, and it's very seldom ideal, in an ideal world, how we handle this emotion and the attachment is just in the background. It's just our foundation that we stand on so that we can just grow and develop and be free, right? But when there isn't that foundation, then seeking these attachments becomes the focus, and then that can get in the way of other growing and learning, unfortunately.
Oh, that makes so much sense, and it's heartbreaking too, right? We can see how it can, quote, go wrong, and we can see how this might bring families into treatment, maybe in the toddler years or in the preschool years. So yeah, I'm just kind of feeling that right now.
Well, it's also making me think a bit about treatment considerations, because I know in our world of EFFT, emotionally focused family therapy, it's very important for us, especially when kids are at these young ages, to focus on, to understand what's happening in terms of attachment in the system. And so can you imagine like a family coming in with a toddler, right, who's symptomizing in some or other way? Like, let's back out and think, what is it important for the therapist to be considering? Does the therapist sit back and take a look at the full system and try to see how a parent's doing? How are these contingencies in place? Is the child symptomizing because it's functioning a certain way in the system? And what are parents needing? How can we resource parents to feel better, to do well in their relationship if they're in a couple's relationship, in order to decrease the stress in the system? Because if the stress is decreased, will the parents naturally attune to what the toddler needs developmentally and then be able to supply this?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot in there. I think as systemic therapists, we're preaching to the choir, right? Like, we, as systemic therapists, we do think systemically. So we think about the parenting dyad. We think about that relationship. We think about the parenting child dyad each way, right? This parent with this kid, that parent with the same kid. So we're thinking of all these dyads. We're thinking of the greater ecological systems. You know, what's the world like at the time? Was it COVID? You know, we talked about that in the infant episode. What's the financial system? And I love the words you use as you take a relational and affectual attachment history, right, of the infant years. And so I think as systemic therapists, we're preaching to the choir. It would be different if the therapist sees this symptomizing toddler and the treatment is only for the toddler. These like individual kind of sees the toddler in a vacuum, not in a system, and just kind of starts treating the toddler. And then all of this attachment dyad, all this attachment work gets waysided, right? Waylaid. And a lot could get missed. And or maybe a non-systemic therapist sees this as a parenting issue and goes towards parent education. And then the risk of that is we kind of sound like we're the experts on parenting and we're telling parents how to be parents. And that would maybe lower their confidence. And so I can see how if we are not systemic thinkers, the treatment considerations would be one way. But if we are systemic thinkers, if we're attachment-based systemic thinkers, the treatment considerations are different, like the ones you were describing.
Yeah, I'm thinking about myself as a therapist right now and thinking like, where would I not think systemically? Where could things go wrong? And I think what I find is that when these systems do present for treatment, I do get the whole family in. But there's a lot of anxiety sometimes. A lot of times the parents are extremely anxious because they can tell something's not right. And the toddler is symptomizing and they really want to be good parents. And so there's a lot of focus on, okay, so what do we do? What do we do? Help us understand our kiddo, right? And if I come in and I just feel that angst, I feel like I'm under tremendous pressure to fix the child. That could cause me to focus too much on the child and not to step back, take a bigger look at the system and think about, hold on, how are parents doing and what do they need? And then as I say that, there's also that tricky part about early childhood intervention, right? If there really is something neurological happening here, the earlier that we diagnose that and treat that is said to be very, very important.
Sure. Absolutely. Right?
So how do we balance?
Thank you for naming that.
The need for early childhood intervention, the anxiety and the focus on the toddler, and our need to take a look at the system and really be thoughtful about how we can come in and resource things.
As a as a family therapist, I always get the image of the spinning plates, right? The spinning plates, you know, looking, yeah, I just think that as a family therapist, there can be a lot of things to assess for.
Yeah.
And that need to be considered in treatment. And I think you just named them really beautifully, right? Potentially individual factors, example, neurological, like you said in the chat.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we don't want to drop any of those plates.
I know. So I think the only way I've been able to take off the pressure for myself is to have a direct conversation with the parents and to be able to say, I know how to work with family relationships. I understand emotion and attachment. That's what I can do. And it's going to take me a couple sessions to get a good understanding of how your family works. I'm not going to have answers for you right away. And if you are concerned about something neurological, developmental, physical, then that's something that we need to get diagnosed or assessed by an expert in that right away. Yeah. I can certainly develop some impressions on that and some hypotheses, and I'll certainly refer you on if needs be, but it is going to take me a number of sessions and consider me like a more general practitioner.
Oh, I love this metaphor, Catherine. I love this metaphor, this idea that you can kind of holistically assess the whole system and even maybe individual factors and differences the best to your, you know, educated and trained ability. And then where needed, you refer off to the specialist, right? Maybe we do need to call in a specialist or get a consult, but I love how you're, again, that clear, direct communication, just like we want parents and kiddos to have, where you're just saying, look, this is my lane. This is, as a general practitioner, this is my treatment lane. I stay in the lane of emotion and attachment. I know how to help you there. Any other concerns you may have, I'm happy to refer you and help you and get you maybe going in the right direction with the specialist. Mm-hmm. But you're just so clear about naming your lane.
I can certainly try to weigh in on that after a few weeks. And we might also see changes happen over a couple weeks as we get those relationships lined up in a nice goal-directed partnership again. What we do know is if there are physiological, neurological factors, that those aren't going to change then. Those are going to just become clearer over time and work on the emotion and attachment pieces.
Nice.
But it does take time, right? So yeah. I really want to consider like how worried parents are, how burnt out they are, how badly they're needing help, what kind of crisis is the system in? And if they're in a place of crisis, we might just need more hands on deck right up front.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Catherine, I think we should wrap up. What do you, any final thoughts, or is there a summary that we have, our little Tango Move 5 here?
Well, it feels kind of heavy, right? Because you've got this little toddler who's coming out into this big wide world and is absorbing so much. And it's like, I think once we're clear on what's important in this age and stage, then it's easier as parents and as therapists to know how to set things up. And of course, life isn't perfect. And I would certainly go back and redo this stage if I could. But I think we also can tell what the signs are if things aren't feeling so good. And then we have some ways because of this amazing book that we can stand back and think about the different aspects and strategies and what the system might be trying to communicate to us about where the help needs to be or can be, resourcing can be.
Yeah. That sounds so good. I don't even think I need to reflect that back, but I will. It's a way to conceptualize this, right? Gives us attachment, gives us a lens from how to conceptualize this. And we can make some guesses based on observations and then call in resources as needed for other issues that may be emerging in the system. But I think that Crittenden and attachment science gives us a really good roadmap. that makes it a little more predictable for us even.
Yes, it helps. Awesome. Thank you, Rhonda. Fun to be with you today, chatting about toddlers.
Awesome chat, listeners. We hope it was helpful for you. This is the second installment in our Attachment in Action series. And I think that means, Catherine, our next installment is called The Preschool Years. Is that right?
Yes.
Awesome. So that one will come out who knows when. Stay tuned, because that's unpredictable at this point.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Ciao.
Bye.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.